October 2nd, 2002, and we are in the undercroft of St. Augustine's Church on Whidbey Island, Washington. How long have you lived on Whidbey Island?
We moved here in 1964.
Mm-hmm. And children?
Oldest is James, who will be 50 on the 1st of November. Barbara is 48, Anne is 47, and Bob is 45.
And are they here on the island?
They're all in Western Washington, not on the island.
You went back to college when you were 50 and said that it was a transforming time for you. Why do you think that was the case? What was so special about that?
It was probably the first time in my life that I'd actually gone anywhere by myself where I didn't have family of some sort around. Might not have been immediate family. I have a twin sister, and the first big break from her was when she stayed on the East Coast and I came west. But I still had a lot of my husband's family around, and when I decided to do this, I was on my own. Mm-hmm. I knew I didn't have other people around to interfere, for one thing, plus to run to. Mm-hmm. And because I was at that point on pretty limited income, it challenged me to learn a whole new lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's when I began to embrace a simple living simply, mm-hmm. sort of philosophy, because I really felt that there were a lot of things I could do without, and I found that was true.
Mm-hmm. What was your major?
Sociology, and I had actually had only 2 years left. I had over a period of time managed to get 2 years of college, and
you went moved to Bellingham.
I moved up to Bellingham, uh-huh. rented an apartment.
Did all that.
Yeah.
And then decided to come back to the island after.
Yeah, I always said intended to come back to the island. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long have you been involved with St. Augustine?
Since 1964, when we moved up here, we became members of the church, for this church.
It was a mission church.
It was a mission at that time, yes. And we had no rector, we had no vicar. We shared a vicar with St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Oak Harbor.
Mm-hmm. So before the church building, the first church building was constructed, where did you hold services?
Now, I wasn't around at that time, but I believe that there were several different places. One was the Langley Library. Another place was a dance studio, which was above one of the buildings in Langley, and I don't remember which now, but it was empty on Sundays, and they took things in there. I had a place to store them, mm-hmm. so they didn't have to carry them around. And the last place before they began to build was the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which is no longer here. It was out on, what is it called now? Just before you get to Scott and Newman
East
Road.
Main, I guess.
It's the main road, and yeah, but it's
main
out
Street.
Out near those new malls that have been put in, right? And near the, all I remember is it was right next to the power plant, which is also still there.
Yeah.
But I understand that there were some times when, before Father Holtz came to serve both congregations, and we had seminarians that they either for some reason or another couldn't get into the building, so they just had their service in the car.
Oh.
Two or three people usually, nevertheless.
That's great.
Now, Father Holtz, would that be H-O-L-Z?
H-U-L-T-I-S.
Yeah.
Is it S or Z? I can't remember for sure.
Okay.
He was a retired Navy chaplain.
Oh.
And he and his wife settled in Oak Harbor and stayed there for quite a few years, even after he retired, before mm-hmm. they moved to somewhere north of Seattle, I think.
Can you tell us about Stanley, is it Bozell?
Bozell.
Bozell, who gave the first land for this church.
Right. I don't know a lot about him. He and his wife came here from Canada. in the early 1950s, maybe at the end of 1940s, actually, I'm not sure. And of course, at that time, land on Whidbey Island was cheap, real cheap. Also at that time, I believe that the Canadian dollar was worth more than the US dollar. So they took advantage of that and bought a lot of land. And then he went into real estate and did very well. And so he owned this land here. Mm-hmm. And donated it to, there wasn't really a corporate organization at that point. Mm-hmm. Eventually it was accepted by the diocese as a place to build. Before that, as I recall, there were two or three other pieces of property that had been offered mm-hmm. to the church, but they weren't really in a place that was going to be good for building. Mm-hmm. Stanley, his first wife died probably in the late 60s, early 70s. If he stayed around, and as a matter of fact, sometime in the 1980s, after my mother-in-law was widowed, they got married.
Oh.
And so he became a part of the family to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
He was among the group of people in the 1970s, the early 1970s, along soon after Father Bill came, who left the church.
Oh.
It was partly his style, the fact that he was bringing a lot of young people who wanted things differently. Nothing is new, and the earth is in. And the new prayer book.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there weren't a huge number, but it was significant because many of them had been founders mm-hmm. of the church.
Now, I read that he designed the first building and that they told the diocese it would cost about $9,000 to build this first building.
I am not sure that he actually designed it. He probably was in on it. A man by the name of Hank Davis did the building
mm-hmm.
from Oak Harbor. And I think that, you know, he may have worked with Stan to design it. I don't know if they had an architect or not. This day and age, you wouldn't get away with it if you didn't have an architect, but they may have had mm-hmm. some expertise among mm-hmm. congregations so they could do it.
Do you remember anything about changing the name of the church?
Yeah, I wasn't really sure what you meant by that. Probably the congregation had no name until it became a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it had been a mission congregation of Trinity Church in Everett, mm-hmm. as well as St. Stephen's in Oak Harbor. They both were. And I'm not exactly sure what they called it. But I do remember that the choosing the name was not an easy thing. And one of the problems was that there was a St. Augustine's Catholic Church in Oak Harbor. And there was some worry about their being confused. And so they promised the bishop that they would call it St. Augustine's in the Woods. Now, it took me a long time to get back to saying St. Augustine's because it always was St. Augustine's. I mean, it's mm-hmm. easier, so.
When you were Sunday school superintendent in 1968, it's hard for those of us who are fairly new to visualize where was church school held? What was different?
All we had was the building over there, and where the office is now was the parish hall.
Oh.
And it was even smaller than it is now. That, uh-huh. that was extended when, I don't remember exactly when, but we needed to have an office for Bill.
Mm-hmm.
He had an office in his home mm-hmm. up until that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we met over there, and of course the church services were just on the other side of the sliding door.
Mm.
The children, I can't really remember. The older children usually went to the services, and I don't remember if the younger children came in at all. And for a while, we tried having a midweek Sunday school, church school, because it was difficult to get had the space for the kids. We had more at that point. It was rather noisy. And so we tried that for about a year on Wednesday afternoons. And the kids could come on the school bus and get off at the top of the hill and walk down. It worked pretty well, mm-hmm. but it wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm. How were funds raised to support the church as a mission church and then to build each of the buildings?
Well, of course, there was a fundraising drive among the congregation and a good many, probably at least a quarter of the donations came from people in the community who had no relationship to the church itself, but knew somebody and were happy to support it. But the ECW, of course, started, and they started in the 1950s by having bake sales and the trash and treasure sale, of course. I don't know if we have those bathroom signs anymore or not, but they had these little bathroom signs and note paper. And those are all Kay Adams' projects. And
Kay Adams' husband did that.
He
made those signs.
Right, he made them, and then they made them together. And there probably were other things. I don't remember.
So lots of individual donations.
Right.
In 1971, you were nominated to and sat on the Bishop's Committee. What is the function of that committee?
Well, the Bishop's Committee functions pretty much like the vestry does. The big difference is not so much between the vestry and the Bishop's Committee as between the structure mm-hmm. of the church. The Bishop's Committee is a committee of the bishop, and he appoints a vicar to oversee a congregation. The Bishop's Committee then is the governing body at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course with the vestry it's a little different because the bishop is involved to some extent, but not in the direct mm-hmm. polity of the daily workings of the church.
So this church had its own Bishop's Committee?
Uh-huh. There were six, I think. And the first one.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, probably there were six. I think there were six until they changed to a vestry and then became nine. But, and a lot of, usually what happens when members of the Bishop's Committee were also delegates to the mm-hmm. convention.
Mm-hmm. In the 1970s, how did the congregation, and I guess it would have been then not a vestry, but the Bishop's Committee, determine that there was a need for a new church building?
Well, one of the things was the Sunday school, and the parish hall was much too small for our needs. Several times during that time, we'd have our annual parish dinners and some of our other dinners over in Freeland Hall because it wasn't used for it. Also, the congregation was growing, mm-hmm. and there really wasn't room for seating mm-hmm. everybody over there. Mm-hmm. In that point, in the 1970s, yes, we did have two services even then. And we were trying to do more with young people, and there really wasn't a place for them mm-hmm. to have their meetings and so on. And at that point, the congregation decided they could raise the money mm-hmm. and do it. They got a loan from the diocese, but that was paid off several years early because everybody decided finally when it got down to a certain level that this is crazy to be paying something every month in interest when we could just, so they just had a special campaign and got the money and paid it off.
You were the first female senior warden to serve at St. Augustine's in 1987. How do you think the role of women in the church has changed since you first became active in this church?
Enormously. Now, women always had a very special place in the church, in the workings of the church, and things like Altar Guild, the ECW, coffee hours. I mean, all those things a church can't function without, and women did primarily those things. But finally, after I think it was after the, probably more so after the ordination, first ordination process, or that whole process for about 6 years in the early 70s leading up to that, women became much more active in the leadership of the church. And now, besides being ordained, there are women in leadership positions in the diocese and in the national church and in the province even. Whereas before 1970, I don't think there was ever anybody, any woman who was in any of those positions. It was totally male. During the 1967 convention, general convention, which was in Seattle, they had a group who had, I can't remember where they came from, but they came in to the convention and had a woman deputy, and they refused to seat her. I really think that did them more harm than good. I think that really got people's ire up, and they thought, this is crazy. There's no reason to do this. So by the next convention, they had women, they accepted women.
Seems hard to believe today.
Yes.
What do you think are the two most difficult problems the parish has had to deal with since its founding?
Well, let's see. I think confronting and accepting change is probably the big one. This is from my perspective, of course. Although we've somewhat overcome that now, I think diversity has always been a problem. Mm-hmm. We have a much more diverse congregation now than we have in the past. Mm-hmm. Although some of that started after Father Bill came, because as I said, he did bring in a large number of young people, mm-hmm. and had a big youth group. And it was pretty much due to him. They all liked him very well. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I can think of anything else that's very specific.
Okay. You've been involved in the Church Endowment Fund and the Legacy Society. Why do you think these are important to St. Augustine's?
Well, for one thing, it helps to provide the Endowment Fund in particular, helps to provide funding for the future. But in other words, to assure that the congregation will continue. But as far as the planned giving is concerned, I think that what it does is to give people an opportunity to be a part of the future, even when they aren't here. When you die, at least you know that you've done something to keep St. Augustine's going into the future. Mm-hmm.
You received the Bishop's Cross for your commitment to the church and to our island community. What's your general philosophy of giving?
Now, are you talking about giving financially or?
Well, it could be either.
No. Yeah. Well, I had the fortune of growing up in a family where both my father and mother did a lot of work in the community, volunteer work of different kinds. They did their own thing, so to speak, but they both did a lot. And so I had that legacy of volunteer work and working to make things better, to provide for those who needed help in some way. And my parents also were very, very much in favor of providing financial assistance where it was needed. Mm-hmm. And I think we have that, I have that legacy, and that is really where it came from. I do believe strongly that everything we have is from God. It's a gift from God. That my life in particular is a gift from God, and that everything I do needs to be get done in thanksgiving for that. Mm-hmm. So my philosophy is based on that premise.
Both giving financially and giving in other ways. What, now we're going to go to some kind of general questions of general interest. What have been the biggest changes you've observed on the island since you moved here?
Oh, a lot. When we first moved here, Highway 525 wasn't. They were just beginning to build it. So when you came from the ferry, you went a very circuitous route to get to Freeland. And so the transportation, the traffic was not bad at all. I think, obviously, the commercial areas have grown. The increase in housing all over the South End is quite amazing. The community was more farm-based, I guess the way I can best describe it, because there are still a lot of family farms around, ranches and that sort of thing. And so lots of things that happened back in the 1960s. I remember when we used to go up to the Freeland Hall on a couple Saturdays a month where they had a dance and a potluck and whatnot, and that was the primary activity. Mm-hmm. That was the sort of thing that people did. They all came together mm-hmm. and just had fun. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that probably the biggest change has come with the increase in the population. It means that we have a lot of different people from a lot of different places who have different opinions about things and different ways of doing things. And yet we pretty much, most of the time, have learned to live together, I think. It's there still are those dissenters, but there always have been, so. I think that the changes that have been done pretty tastefully. I'm pleased that that a lot of the residential areas have been developed away from the main road and done with a lot of, for the most part, with a lot of green space mm-hmm. around it. And some of that, of course, is due to the fact that people have insisted on it. But still, I think it's been done very tastefully for the most part.
What are the major issues you think we face on the island today?
Probably transportation is still one of them. More, not so much. Not so much new and more extensive roads, although I'll say that the traffic signals have saved my life a lot of time. And I didn't think I'd ever want to have one on South Whidbey, but I sure am glad we have them now. I think we need to provide better public transportation for people so we don't get our roads all clogged with cars. It's
also water.
Also what?
Water.
That's right. That's a big problem is the amount of water. It's hard for people to understand that we don't have a lake or rivers and things that we take our water out of. It's a single source aquifer, and that's the rain that comes down and goes into the ground. And there's no matter how much water you have, and I'm on a well that has never had any problems, there's only so much water. And once we run out of water, then you can't live here any longer. Not, at least not with regular water. You have to import it in some way, which has happened in Oak Harbor, and that has been brought up as something that could be done here. But I just think that that's one of the reasons to be very careful about how much building mm-hmm. goes on.
Are there any other experiences or history about the church or island you think we should know about?
Well, I think since I was here in 1964, and for 6 years we had the the part-time person here, and then for a while, we had a interim vicar, I guess he was. I'm not sure what we called him, but he was a lovely person, and in fact, he's the one that consulted with us and helped us to the point of saying we need to have someone of our own, someone for ourselves. So after Bill came, as I said, he was he attracted a lot of young people to come into the church, and I think at that point, that was probably, as far as I know, the first big split we had in the in our congregation, and there was very little there was very little room for compromise for too many people, and as I said, at that point we had some people leave. The thing was that we had lots of new people coming in, so it didn't, as far as the numbers were concerned, it wasn't a problem, but it was a real change in the way we accepted ourselves as a congregation, as a church, and particularly as an Episcopal church. I remember one time my children were here. We moved up here when our oldest son was in seventh grade. And he didn't really stick it out for very long. He graduated from high school in 1970, and Bill came that same year, or he came the year before, I guess. You know. And so he and some of his friends wanted to do something specific for the church to express their feelings about spirituality and theology and religion and so on. And there were about six of them, I think. Most, they may have been all boys, but at least most of them were. And they put together one of the most amazing multimedia shows that I've ever seen. And it used cassette tapes and some slides flashed on the screen and some poetry reading and a lot of different things. And this was during the Vietnam War. And of course, these were all young men who very possibly might be having to go into the military. So it was their way of expressing how they felt, I think. Not only about the war, but about themselves and what the changes were going to be when they, if they had to go into military. So that to me was one of the, it's one of those things that I keep saying, why can't we do that now when we probably could if we had the people, but and had the interest in doing it. Mm-hmm. So I just remember that very well. There was, I said, there was a wonderful youth group at that time. We probably had about 12 or 15 young people. Mm-hmm. And they weren't all members of the church. I mean, they weren't all confirmed members. They mm-hmm. came to church and so on, but they kids brought in their friends and that sort of thing, so mm-hmm. it was a good time.
How was that accepted, their presentation?
It was accepted pretty well by most people, and of course it brought in people not only from this church, but from other churches and other, from the school and that sort of thing. I think that part of it wasn't too bad. I think they were impressed by the fact that the kids could actually do this, for one thing. They may not have liked some of the content, but those that had a mature outlook on it, I think, agreed that it was their way of expressing how they felt, and that was the important thing.
Mm-hmm. Anything else we should touch upon?
I don't think so.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.